Job chapter 38. Job has gone through the worst ordeal that anyone has ever gone through. He has lost all his possessions, his family, his health. To make things worse, when his friends show up to comfort him, they only make things worse. They take hammers and are pounding him on the head. They're trying to drive him into the ground, anything that they can do. They are convinced that the reason Job is having such a hard time is because he must have some secret sin. And as we've been looking, as we've been going through Job, we've been trying to make the point, you know, yes, sometimes difficult things happen because it's punishment, it's a judgment, it's a response of something we've done. Yes, that happens sometimes, but not all the time. And sometimes there's a lot more reasons why difficult things happen. With Job, it was a test. It was a display. It was a thing to show to all of heaven that Job didn't serve God just because life was good for serving God. John Corson, and I don't know if he coined this phrase, Twinkie Christians. And I have yet to do this. We bought the Twinkies, but I haven't done this yet. Last week we actually bought the carton of Twinkies. So I'm going to be doing this series of experiments following up. I've got to test everything that everybody says. And John Corson says that if you put Twinkies in the microwave oven and you set it for a minute, at up to 44 seconds, everything's cool. At 45 seconds, Twinkies explode everywhere. And you know what? Some of us, you may not want to hear this, but some of us are Twinkie Christians. And when things get tough, we're all over the place. And we explode. And Job's going through a test to prove to heaven that he's not a Twinkie Christian. He's a guy that's going to stick it out. And he does. He complains. He grumbles. He's got a bad attitude through the whole thing. And God's going to deal with this. And that's what we're going to look at this morning, is how God deals with Job. But he's not a Twinkie. He doesn't lose it. He doesn't bail. He doesn't say, God, I don't need you anymore. As the friends were speaking, we've seen that a storm began to develop. A literal weather, climactic conditions change. The clouds are coming in. A storm begins to break. And it is in the storm that God speaks. That's what we talked about last week. We talked about the voice in the storm. It's in the storm. Very ironic. This man going through such trouble, and then a storm comes, almost a picture of his life, and God speaks in the storm. We have an insurance company. The church has an insurance company. And they like to send us stuff to keep us up to date with stuff. And so they have like this newsletter thing, really slick newsletter, really cool thing that they send out. And my wife was showing it to me yesterday. And the lead article on this week's newsletter or this month's newsletter was Safeguarding Your Ministry, Staying Grounded in High Winds. And it goes on to say, when the winds pick up, make sure your church stays on the ground. Every part of the country has its own unique weather concerns. Blizzards in the north, tornadoes in the Midwest, hurricanes in the south. Regardless of where you live, those storms come out of nowhere, leaving you little time to prepare. And they often come with high winds, which increase the likelihood of severe property damage and the potential for injury. Though it's difficult to predict these types of storms, steps can be taken ahead of time to protect against severe damage and injury. Following are some things you can do to minimize damage and injury before, during, and before, during, and after a windstorm. I just thought it was hugely ironic that we get that this week in the mail, this thing about storms. And yesterday, last week, we talked all about storms. And then I think God, in his humor, you know, did some things with the weather this week. Wasn't that like freaky? Was that weird or what? And so chapter 38, verse 1, then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind, out of the storm. Job has been complaining. We've seen it several times through the book. Job has been complaining, saying, God, why don't you speak to me? What's going on? This is so unfair. God, why don't you speak? And, you know, God's been quiet. He's been quiet through the whole thing. And now God speaks. This is the kind of stuff that, if you can kind of figure out where God's going with this stuff, there's some pretty heavy stuff here. There's a purpose for it. I think sometimes I read these chapters 38, 39, 40, and 41. There's four chapters of stuff that God speaks. And sometimes you kind of wonder, why is God doing this stuff? It's like a natural history or it's a lesson in animals or something. What's the point? There is a point. There's a huge point. For some of us, God wants to rattle our cage a little bit and wake us up to who He is. And so God speaks to Job out of the whirlwind. God finally shows up. And God says, verse 2, "Who is this that darkeneth counsel by words without knowledge?" Another translation says, "Why do you confuse the issue? Why do you talk without knowing what you're talking about?" And you know, that's where Job's got kind of gets himself into some trouble. Is he talks about a lot of stuff that he really doesn't know anything about. You know what? Some of our complaining, that's exactly where some of my complaining goes. I don't know the whole deal. He says, verse 3, "Gird up now thy loins like a man, and I will demand of thee, and answer thou me." Up to this point, Job's been asking a lot of questions. How come? Why? This isn't fair. And now God says, okay, buddy, I'm going to answer, but I'm going to do it by asking you some questions. I'm going to ask you some questions. Chapter 38, verse 4. We're going to skip kind of through, hop and skip through some of the stuff. I just want to pick out some of the stuff from chapter 38. God says in verse 4, "Where wast thou when I laid the foundations of the earth? Declare if thou hast understanding. Who hath laid the measures thereof if thou knowest? Or who hath stretched the line upon it? Whereupon are the foundations fastened, and who laid the cornerstone thereof when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy?" He's talking about the creation of the world, the creation of the heavens. And this thing about the morning stars and the sons of God, apparently the angels were providing background music as God created. And God challenges Job. Where were you, Mr. Know-it-all? Because, see, that's sometimes the attitude where our complaints come out of. Well, I know it all. I know why my life stinks. Because this. And God says, okay, Mr. Know-it-all, let's shake you up a little bit. It's not a bad thing. Verse 4, where he says, "Where wast thou when I laid the foundations of the earth?" Where were you when I made this place? That would be a great line to have at the beginning of science textbooks and geology textbooks, wouldn't that? Wouldn't that be great to have that required by law to put in the front of every science textbook in the state? Wouldn't that be great? Where were you, buddy, when I made this place? A group of scientists one day, they got together and decided that man had come a long way and no longer needed God. So they picked one scientist to go and to tell God that they were done with him. The scientist walks up to God and says, "God, we've decided that we no longer need you. We're to the point where we can clone people and do many miraculous things, so why don't you just go on and get lost?" God listened very patiently and kindly to the man. After the scientist was done talking, God said, "Well, how about this? Let's say we have a man-making contest." The scientist replied, "Fine! No problem! Great! We can do this!" And God said, "Now, we're going to do this just like I did back in the old days with Adam." The scientist, sure, no problem. And he bent down and grabbed himself a handful of dirt. God looked at him and he said, No. Get your own dirt. He's the creator. Everything everything comes from Him. He's the Creator. He is your Creator. We've got to remember who He is. That's what this morning is all about. Remembering God, who God is. If you're going to receive help in your difficult times, you need to step back and think about who God is. And I pray that this morning I might stretch some of you, maybe blow up some of your ideas of who God is. When King Hezekiah years ago found Jerusalem surrounded by the most fearful army in the world, the Assyrian army, he prayed. He gathered everybody together and he prayed. And he says in 2 Kings 19:15, he says, O Lord God of Israel, thou dwellest among the cherubims. Thou art the God, even thou alone of all the kingdoms of the earth. Thou hast made heaven and earth. Lord, bow down thine ear and hear. Open, Lord, thine eyes and see and hear the words of Sennacherib, which hath sent him to reproach the living God. One of the things that you will see through the scriptures is that when people get in trouble, it helps to remember that He is the God who made the heavens and the earth. You've got to step back and see how big He is. When the early church began to suffer persecution, they gathered together to pray. And in Acts 4:24, it says, and when they heard that, about all the persecution that started, they lifted up their voice to God with one accord and said, Lord, Thou art God, which hast made heaven and earth and the sea and all that is in them. And they went on to pray and said, oh God, use us. Oh God, give us boldness. But they stopped to think about who God is, how big He is. Look at Jeremiah 32. I want you to see this verse. Look at Jeremiah chapter 32, verse 17. I don't know about you, but maybe I'm just a guy who gets depressed easily. I don't know. But it just seems like whenever I go through anything, it's just like the worst thing in the world. Do you ever feel that way? Like whenever you go through anything? I mean, it's like, it's just hard not to get, oh no, that kind of stuff. And whether you're going through things as bad as Job, or whether it's just what you're going through, sometimes life just seems too tough to deal with, doesn't it? It's just too much. I can't do this. This is a great promise. Jeremiah reminded us that because God is the Creator, there is nothing too difficult for Him. He says this, Ah, Lord God, Jeremiah 32:17. Ah, Lord God, behold, Thou hast made the heaven and the earth by Thy great power and stretched out arm, and there is nothing too hard for Thee. When we stop and think about God being the Creator, I think it's kind of cool to do what God does to Job. Because, we can stop and we can think about, okay, God's the Creator. Okay, look around us. Okay, that God made the stuff that the bricks are made out of. God made the stuff that the posts are made out of. Yes, God made the stuff that the pews are made out of. Yeah, God's the Creator. Okay. But, it's just a whole lot bigger than that. I mean, step back and begin to grasp the vastness of His creation. Nothing is too difficult for Him. He is the Creator. Look at back in Job. Back in Job 38, verse 8. He says, Or who shut up the sea with doors when it break forth? He's going to talk about the creation of the oceans and just the forming of the oceans. Who shut up the sea with doors when it break forth as if it had issued out of the womb? When I made the cloud the garment thereof, and thick darkness a swaddling band for it, and break up for it my decreed place, and set bars and doors, and said, Hitherto shalt thou come, but no further, and here shall thy proud waves be stayed. Now he's talking about the ocean. And when he talks about this thing with the cloud and the swaddling band, I believe what he's talking about is what we would call the canopy. This is something that happened initially in creation. The Bible talks about God creating a firmament, waters above the earth. We believe that it seems that the Bible seems to teach this thing called a canopy, that before the flood of Noah, the earth was covered by a thick water mass. Now, I don't know whether it was vapor or whether it was water or something, but this canopy would have protected the earth against harmful radiation. It would have created, in a sense, a greenhouse effect, they call it. I mean, we hear about the greenhouse effect today with the pollution and all that kind of stuff. But back then, well, you know, summertime, your car's been sitting in the parking lot with the windows rolled up. What's it like when you get in the car? It's horrible. I mean, my air conditioning just went out this morning. I just cannot wait to go home and get in my car. I'm just like, it's going to be hot. Why? Because it just, the heat builds up. Well, we believe, and there's many scientists who believe this, that with this canopy surrounding the earth, that between the creation and the days of Noah, the earth was a lush tropical paradise. You can go to the Institute of Creation Research website. They've got articles about this. Just kind of talk about this. A fallen 90-foot fruit tree with ripe fruit and green leaves still on its branches has been found in the frozen ground of the New Siberian Islands. 90-foot tall fruit tree with the fruit and the leaves still on it, frozen. The only tree vegetation that grows there now is a 1-inch high willow tree. Palm tree fossils have been found in the early tertiary strata in Alaska. Large fossil leaves of tropical plants have been found in Permian sandstone 250 miles from the South Pole. Crocodiles were once prolific in New Jersey and England, not just in the sewers. You know, you can go the route of saying, well, this is just millions and millions and millions of years ago. But you know what? There's another explanation, that there was a canopy over the earth. I think this explains it. And when the flood came, if you read through the account in Genesis, water came up from the ground and water came from the sky. The canopy collapsed. Verse 11, God says to the ocean, he says, hitherto shalt thou come, but no further, and here shalt thy proud waves be stayed. He's talking about the ocean, God creating the ocean, God setting boundaries on the ocean. Another translation says, verses 10, 11, then I made a playpen for it, a strong playpen, so it wouldn't run loose, and said, stay here, this is your place, ocean. Your wild tantrums are confined to this place. God having command over the oceans. 71% of the world's surface is covered with ocean. 71%. Or 140 million square miles. The total volume of the ocean is approximately 322,300,000 cubic miles of water. The greatest depth measured so far in the ocean is called the Challenger Deep. It's in the Pacific Ocean, in the southwestern end of the Marianas Trench, just off of the island of Guam. It has been measured to be 36,190 feet, or 6.85 miles deep, deepest part of the planet. If you cut Mount Everest off at sea level, and you pick it up and toss it into the Challenger Deep, it would still have over a mile of water on top of it. And this thing is huge, okay? If you're on a boat at the surface over the Challenger Deep and you drop a rock, it'll take over an hour for it to hit the bottom. It's deep. In 1960, Swiss oceanographer Jacques Picard, I don't think it was Jean-Luc, it was Jacques Picard, his older brother, and the United States Navy Lieutenant Donald Walsh, they actually went into the Challenger Deep in a French-built bathyscape called the Trista, and they took it down to 35,810 feet, the deepest descent in history. Man, imagine their ears popped a few times or something. If you level out the planet's surface, we would be covered a mile and a half in water. There's that much water on this planet. The ocean is huge. It's huge. Somebody put it there. Somebody controls it. Isaiah 40:12, it says, God has measured the waters in the hollow of his hand and meted out the heaven with a span. Our God is huge. He is the creator. Skip over to verse 31 of chapter 38. Talking about stars, it says, canst thou bind the sweet influences of Pleiades or loose the bands of Orion? Canst thou bring forth Maserot in his season, or canst thou guide Arcturus with his suns? And it's talking about stars here, things up in the heavens. It says, can you, Job, can you do the ocean thing? Can you control the ocean? You imagine going off to the beach and going, okay, wave, stop. Hi-ya! You want to do the Karate Kid thing, get up on a little post, and no way. Now he says, can you bind the sweet influences of the Pleiades? The Pleiades is a cluster of stars. They used to think that it was a cluster of seven stars. That was back in the days before glasses. And now some people with glasses say that you can see 12 stars. It's actually a loose cluster of 400 to 500 stars surrounded with a nebula deal thing that's all lit up by the light of these stars. The stars are about one light year apart each, and it's a huge thing. And God says, can you bind the sweet influences of the Pleiades? Can you put it in its orbit? Can you control it? He says, or loose the bands of Orion. Orion is the name of a constellation. We'll talk about that more in a minute. Can you bring forth Maserot in his season? This word Maserot, it's a Hebrew word, and it's the Hebrew equivalent of the zodiac, the 12 constellations. Where you walk into a bar and they say, hey, buddy, what's your sign? Or whatever. Yeah, I don't know how that works. But the stuff with the zodiac, it's been around for a while. We think that it was probably originally a way of keeping track of time. There's 12 months. That's the deal. I found, as I was researching this, the historians think that the zodiac, the concept of the zodiac, is about 2,000 years ago. It came from Mesopotamia area, about 2,000 BC, not 2,000 years ago. Thank you, 2,000 BC. It's kind of interesting that God's talking to Job about this. Do you make these things move? These 12 things move in their seasons. It's interesting because the Book of Job, we think, was written around 2,000 BC. It's kind of fascinating. It's just fascinating stuff. He says, or canst thou guide Arcturus with his suns? Arcturus, this is another star. This is the fourth brightest star in the sky. It's part of the constellation Ursa Major, the Great Bear. And I'll talk in a minute about Arcturus. We talk about God's relationship to the stars. It's big enough when you think of God creating the ocean, God putting boundaries on the ocean, God guiding. I was reading all kinds of fascinating stuff about the ocean currents and all this kind of stuff. But when you start moving up to the level of stars, our sun itself is pretty big. It's kind of big. If you took the Earth and you tried to fit it into the sun, it would take you 1,300,000 Earths to fill the sun. The sun's pretty big, huh? Don't you think the sun's pretty big? It's pretty big. It's pretty good. Pretty good size. It's fueled by nuclear fusion. Every second, fusion reacts, converting 700 million metric tons of hydrogen. 700 million metric tons of hydrogen. Every second, gets converted into helium within the sun's energy-generating core. In doing so, 5 million metric tons of this matter becomes energy and leaves the sun as radiation and as light, and that's, you know, how we work with this stuff. Every second, 5 million metric tons get sent out. The sun is huge. Arcturus, we talked about Arcturus, because it was in here. Remember that? Arcturus is part of this, part of Ursa Major. Arcturus is 40 light years from our sun. And because it lies pretty close, only 40 light years away, a light year is how far light travels in a vacuum over the space of a year. And light travels, yeah, I forgot, I'm one winging it, 286,000 miles per second. Okay, so it's really far. A light year is pretty far. Arcturus is 40 light years from the sun. We've been able to measure its diameter. The diameter is 23 times that of our sun, Arcturus is. Arcturus was one of the first stars to actually have its motion in the sky detected through comparing it with ancient charts. Arcturus has been called the runaway star because of its motion. It travels at 125,000 miles per second. That's just only a little faster than I drive. And God says, canst thou guide Arcturus with his sons? 125,000 miles per second? I barely drive my car. No, I drive my car very well. Something that's the diameter is 23 times that of our sun, which we could fit 1,300,000 Earths into the sun. And God says, you want to try driving Arcturus for a while? One of the reddest bright stars in the sky, Antares, is classed as a supergiant. Its diameter is 300 million miles, which is more than 300 times that of the sun. And it's 400 light years away. There's another star called Alnilam. It's also called Epsilon Orionis. It's the fourth brightest star in the constellation of Orion. We've talked about Orion. Orion's the one that has the three little stars supposed to be across his belt up in the sky. One of these stars, and it's only the fourth brightest star in this constellation, it produces a light output of 50,000 suns. The largest known star is known as the Pistol Star. And I'm telling you, I could set this up for a joke, huh? Pistol Star. It's a shooting star. It has a mass of 100 to 150 times that of the sun and is 10 million times brighter than the sun. And God says to Job, can we talk, pal? You want to try running some of this stuff? You want to get a clue of how big I am? Our God is huge. Our God is huge. I mean, you think about, you know, sometimes when you look at the story of David and Goliath, and you think, boy, that guy sure had courage. David, little David, young David, sure had courage. My goodness, to come up against this 9-foot-6-inch tall giant with just a sling. Boy, he's really got courage or faith, or he's stupid as all get out. And woo! And what did David say when he ran up to him? He says, you come to me with the sword and the shield, and I come to you in the name of the God of heaven, the Lord of hosts. Well, at the beginning, you come, it's like, David, you're nuts. But when we get to think about who the God of heaven is, he's huge. Over in chapter 39, verse 26, I did more bird research. In chapter 39, verse 26, there's a whole bunch in here. If you go through chapter 38 and 39, God will start talking about He talks about storms, about how he controls storms. He talks about animals. He talks about birds and the intricacies of maintaining creation. Not only does he talk about big things, about how huge the stars are and stuff, and can you drive them, buddy? You want to? Here, I'll hand you the keys to Arcturus. You know, you try running it for a while. But then he starts talking about it on a smaller level. Do you know how, you know, the animals out in the wilderness, who takes care of them? Who keeps them? You know how they work. Can you maintain this kind of stuff? And one of the things he talks in verse 26 of chapter 39, he says, doth the hawk fly by thy wisdom and stretch her wings toward the south? And he's been talking about, I don't know how many birds he brings up. He talks about a lot of different birds. And even though there are some incredibly dumb birds, I mean, there are some really stupid birds. He talks about the ostrich, which is really stupid bird. But some birds have some amazing things built into them. We talked on Wednesday about the Pacific golden plover that flies from Alaska to Hawaii every year, It flies. It gets all kinds of frequent flyer mileage, and it's not on Air Alaska. The thing does it by itself, and it lays its eggs in Alaska. And after the eggs hatch and the birds get to be enough to take care of themselves, the parents leave for Hawaii. Does that sound like a deal, parents? Huh? Should have been a plover, a golden Pacific plover. Leave the kids at home. But you know what? The kids follow. Afterwards, after they get old enough to fly, the kids follow all the way across the Pacific, and they find Hawaii. How do they do that? Well, global positioning satellites. No. These are bird brains. You know what? As incredible as the Pacific golden plover was, I found one even better. The Arctic tern. It's about 15 inches long. It looks like a seagull. Every year, the Arctic tern travels from the North Pole to the South Pole every year. 25,000 miles. They live to be 20 years old. They make the trip 20 times. And you talk about your frequent flyer miles. I mean, these things, you know, probably get all kinds of free flights, you know. Amazing. Say, I believe it was the same deal where the parents take off and the kids just show up. I found this is fascinating. The Arctic tern has an elaborate mating behavior that begins with the female pursuing the male to high altitudes. The courtship continues on the ground, where the male presents a small fish held in his bill to the female. And they mate for life. They both protect the nest. They both care for the eggs, and they feed the young. Now, see, this is a good thing if you're thinking about getting married. You know, come down to Earth and give her a fish. And she's going to call you a bird brain. Incredible stuff, these birds. John Corson was talking about research on crows, the common crows, those birds you just love to hate and get the guns out and shoot them and just... Researchers did a study on crows, and they found that crows count. They found this out by watching a garden, and the crows would sit off to the side when the researchers were there, and so they built a blind, like a duck blind, a bird blind, and they went to hide in the blind, but the crows knew that the researcher was in there, so they tried to fool the crows. Two researchers went in, and one came out. The crows waited. They think, what, you think we're stupid or something? So they go back out. The guy brings two friends. So there's three researchers go into the blind. Two of them leave. The crows are going, huh? So they wait. four guys go in, three go out. Five guys go in, four guys go out. They get all the way up to 50 before the crows lose count. Isn't that incredible? Bird brains, crows. I just wish they could learn to tell time so they wouldn't wake me up in the morning going, quack, quack. Oh, man. God has such... God is awesome. He has designed so much. From the hugest things down to the smallest level. Birds, incredible. Jesus said in Luke 12:6, he said, are not five sparrows sold for 2 cents, and yet not one of them is forgotten before God? Indeed, the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Do not fear. You are of more value than many sparrows. We have an awesome God. And He does care about you. Here's the whole deal. Here's the whole deal for this morning. It's all about getting more of Him. Let me explain this. Warren Wiersbe writes this: the answer to Job's problems was not an explanation about God, such as the three friends and Elihu had given. His answer was a revelation of God. The four men had declared and defended the greatness of God, but had failed to persuade Job. When God displayed His majesty and greatness, it humbled Job and brought him to the place of silent submission before God. That's the turning point for Job. Sometimes we get all caught up in our problems. And you know what? I'm there. That's me. And sometimes the stuff we go through is so huge, so overwhelming, so over my head. Sometimes it's so confusing. God, why? Why is this stuff happening? And you know what? Sometimes God doesn't answer that question. And sometimes the solution is not getting that question answered. Sometimes the solution is just seeing more of Him. I just need to know you more. I need to know how big you are. I need to remember that. God is bigger than you. God is, and it's going to come as a shock, God is smarter than you. That's the whole point of this whole thing in Job. Is that we just hit little bits and pieces of it. We lived it a little bit more on Wednesday night, but Job just kind of, and at one point God says, so, you got something to say here? And Job just goes, I'm not going to say anything. If He can handle running the universe, do you think your life is too much for Him? Look at John chapter 1, verse 1. This God who created the heavens and the earth. John chapter 1, verse 1. This God who created the heavens and the earth is also the same God who entered into time and space, and became a man. John 1, verse 1, it says, in the beginning was the Word was with God, the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. It's talking about Jesus. Look it down at verse 14. And the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. And we beheld His glory, the glory as the only begotten of the Father. full of grace and truth. It's this same God. Look at John chapter 19. It is this same God. John 19, verse 13. It's the same God who entered into our time, into our space, into our world. It's the same God who took on flesh for one purpose, to go to a cross. And He went to the cross because He knew that you and I needed that. He went to the cross because He loves us. It's the same Creator. I mean, I just had a blast working on this sermon. Looking stuff. I like science stuff, I love this stuff. And to think of how huge and yet detailed and smart and wise our God is, and yet it's the same God. Look at the irony. John 19, verse 13. It says, when Pilate therefore heard that saying, he brought Jesus forth and sat down in the judgment seat in the place that is called the pavement, but in Hebrew is called Gabbatha, and it was the preparation of the Passover in about the sixth hour. And he said to the Jews, behold, your king. He's right. Behold, your king. And they cried away, away with him, away with him, crucify him. Pilate said unto them, shall I crucify your king? The chief priests answered, we have no king but Caesar. How sad. Then delivered he him therefore unto them to be crucified. And they took Jesus and led him away. And he, bearing his cross, went forth unto a place called the place of the skull, which is called in Hebrew Golgotha, where they crucified him, and two others with him on either side, one, and Jesus in the midst. And Pilate wrote a title, put it on the cross, and the writing was, Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews. But this title then read many of the Jews, for the place where Jesus was crucified was nigh to the city, and it was written in Hebrew, Greek, and Latin. Then said the chief priests of the Jews to Pilate, write not the King of the Jews, but that he said, I am the King of the Jews. Pilate answered, what I have written, I have written. Then the soldiers, when they had crucified Jesus, took his garments and made four parts, to every soldier a part, and also his coat. Now the coat was without seam, woven from the top throughout. And they said therefore among themselves, let us not rend it, but cast lots for it, whose it shall be, that the scripture might be fulfilled, which saith, they parted my raiment among them, and for my vesture did they cast lots. These things therefore the soldiers did. You know, I was thinking how ironic that Jesus got to the place on earth where everything was taken away from him, it looks like. And yet he's the one that made everything. And they think they're taking everything. I just think, wow, what irony. I think about him hanging on a cross made out of wood that he created. I mean, doesn't something inside you want to scream, no! Doesn't it? This is stupid. What are you doing? This is the Creator of the vastness of the universe, and you're crucifying Him. You know what? He had to be crucified because He had to die for your sins and my sins. And He did it because He loves you. Don't ever question God's love for you. We get so confused by the tough things we go through. And we think, God, it's just, well, you don't love me anymore. I don't understand this. Look, you don't ever need to question God's love for you. He proved it at the cross, beyond a shadow of a doubt. Romans 5:8, God demonstrated His love for us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. And so here we are. You and I go through tough things. And we don't understand. And we ask questions. And we cry, we complain, We do all the stuff that Job did. And you know what we need to do? I think we need to step back every once in a while and remember just who God is. And I think we need to step back and remember the truth of His love for us. And then maybe a little bit like Job, there's going to be times where I just have to shut up and just trust Him. Because He knows what's going on. He knows you. He knows what you need. He said, God like no other. There is no other God. Oh, and how He loves you. Beloved, find the rest in who He is.